Hey, it's Melvin, one of your friendly neighborhood podcast hosts. Whether it's your first time tuning in or you're a longtime listener, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever. Reviews are the lifeblood of the podcast world, so if you want to help us out, it'll take only a moment of your time. Otherwise, we hope you enjoy the show. Hi, my name is Melvin, and Eleanor is Queen. Welcome to Cinematic Doctrine, a Christian podcast service that seeks to encourage and equip Christians to engage and reform the culture of cinema. In this episode, I'm joined by my lovely wife, Catherine, and the two of us are going to talk about the reality game show Killer Camp. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, there are a lot of films and TV shows that aren't producing right now. Not only that, just before the shutdown, a looming writer's strike was coming in Hollywood, which meant scripted television was going to have a slump. With this in mind, most production companies embrace reality television as a means for cheap, unscripted, and quickly produced content. This is why you can have some wild shows like The Masked Singer or I Can See Your Voice, two absurdly bonkers singing competition shows on television during the largest economic crisis in ages. It's cheap, easy, and quick to produce. Alongside this, American TV channels may license foreign game shows and reality shows to fill time slots in their schedule. And this summer, a British game show called Killer Camp made the rounds on the CW. Killer Camp's premise is absolutely wild, and Catherine and I talk about the excitement present in this reality game show's gimmick. We also discuss its easily compelling and engaging mechanics, and also how the Killer Camp game was ripe with strife and division. This sparks a conversation about watching entertainment television that contains real-life events and conversations that hurt people. Then we discuss various trivia regarding the difficulty of producing Killer Camp in such a tight schedule, and how the killing scenes of each murdered contestant was executed, pun intended. And lastly, when we dive into the spoilers, we share our surprise at certain revelations within the show, and how I've used a tactic we see in Killer Camp during a game of Mafia back in my youth group days. Without further ado, here's our discussion on Killer Camp. Catherine Donnell Benson, the love of my life. What's up, my love?
Not much. Just talking to a hunk on the internet.
What? Who's that?
Well, of course it's you.
What? Aw, I like that.
Thanks.
Before we got into this, I really wanted her to tell you guys all about this awesome scarecrow she worked on. Kat, can you tell them about this? Ugh, I just love this. It's so cute.
I think I mentioned briefly, like in the last episode, that I had guest appeared on, which is Samson. You guys can go check it out if you're interested.
Yeah, it's a good episode. Catherine did a great job. I did pretty good. And she's got a write-up on the website, too.
Yeah. But I think I mentioned last episode that I work at a preschool. So wrangling a bunch of kiddos, doing a lot of arts and crafts, and something that we like to do every year at my school is we have a scarecrow competition. Every year, each teacher from each classroom chooses a design. The kids help to either build it, stuff it, stake it, and then they're displayed in the front of our school for the month of October. The families get a chance to vote on which scarecrow they like the most. We do like a little pizza party for the winning scarecrow. The teachers have some incentives too. But something that was a part of my scarecrow adventure this year, for the design that I chose for our classroom, I picked Baby Yoda, or the child, if you're being very specific, from The Mandalorian. So this is not like my first rodeo. I've made, I think, 3 scarecrows now.
And you've made plushes before, and you sew things all the time. So it's pretty good.
Yeah, it's kind of weighted in my favor that, you know, a part of my workplace morale is, hey, sew this giant, like, 6-foot creature and stuff it full of hay. And this year it was much smaller, probably like a good like little 2-foot buddy, but I sewed him together. I bought some sunglasses, popped the lenses out, slapped him on his face, gave him a little smile, and all of my 1-year-olds helped to stuff it. It's super cute. I'm super proud of it. Baby Yoda is the best thing to come out of 2020. So
and you made like a little carrier, like a little space carrier out of like a bin, and you chopped off a piece of it to make it look round, and it almost looks like you could close it like the like his space carriage.
Yeah, that was like the scariest part though, because it was probably about this late at night a couple weeks ago, and I was sprawled out on our kitchen floor with like a box cutter and this giant, like, not Tupperware, but like this giant plastic basket that I had bought from Lowe's, just hoping that I don't slice a finger off while I try to make the cutest space carriage I've ever seen.
It was awesome. And that was after trying to make like a clay one, that like the clay that we bought was the wrong kind and it started to shrink. And so like it was a clay layered on top of a ball. And since the clay couldn't shrink anywhere, it just cracked. So Catherine had made this really beautiful mold. And then we come back the next day and it's like Baby Yoda is like past rigor mortis and is just falling apart. It was so scary. It was just like we still have it. I think it's in the laundry room, right? Yeah. It's just like laying there and it's petrifying. It's like a zombie Baby Yoda.
Yeah, I made these tiny little claw hands too, and they're just like cracked up. It's like in 0.1 seconds, he went from Baby Yoda to like end of his life spirit force ghost Yoda. Like it was bad.
It's awesome though, and it motivated Catherine to make the plush version, which is also super cute. So it's awesome. Catherine's awesome. Kat, thanks so much for being on this episode and helping me out. It's awesome.
Thanks for having me.
Say awesome a couple more times. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
Is it out of your system?
I hope so. I was looking around online to find a show to do this week, and I found this show called Killer Camp. And I'm like, what is Killer Camp? What is this thing? And it's a reality game show where there is a killer on the loose who each night is killing people. And I'm like, okay, this is it. It's 5 episodes. We can do this. Catherine and I can watch this in like a 24-hour period. The next 24 hours can be show notes, and then the next 24 hours can be editing. So it is perfect. So that's where we are right now. we are getting this done, baby. And I got to say, this was a lot of fun. So before we get into the specifics of our enjoyment of this show, or what we took away from basically watching a reality game show in 2020, those things that nobody our age does, maybe, I don't know. I think my sister really likes the Great British Baking Show. So there's that. But we are going to be cutting into Killer Camp. So Killer Camp is directed by Mike Parker, but typically with reality game shows, the focus is more on who's presenting the show, who is Bobby Mayer. Bobby Mayer is a Canadian stand-up comedian who says he's a third cousin to Justin Bieber, but that he's also never met him. Couldn't go verify it, but I thought that was a little cute. The synopsis for Killer Camp is this. In this 5-part reality event series, 11 British strangers are shocked to discover they are not going on a fun new reality show called Summer Camp, but actually participating in a horror whodunit called Killer Camp. During the day, each camper completes a series of games and objectives to raise the general prize pool of the camp, but money lost lands in the killer's pockets. However, the camp can also earn clues as to who the killer is, and using their investigative skills, find out which player is the killer during their downtime. But when night comes, someone will be murdered, and they must determine who the secret murderer is amongst them before the killer makes off with everyone's money. So, Catherine, what are we looking at for this content awareness?
As far as things go with the content awareness, the rating, Killer Camp is unrated. So just to kind of give us a custom certification, kind of an idea of what to expect from the show, the show does contain graphic violence, language, and suggestive content.
We stepped away with it feeling kind of like it's TV-14, right? If it were to officially be certified, it'd be probably TV-14.
I would say that's safe. I don't know how all the other ratings work, but we'll just say like, yeah, it's probably like TV-14 at most. So yeah, to give us an idea of what we're looking at, like in terms of the graphic violence, which really isn't like as bad as, at least I think, as it would seem. Gimmick of the game show is that each night someone will die. So obviously they don't actually die, but the show changes from a reality show to a scripted death scene. Some are graphic, but they're completed with, like, for the most part, non-graphic imagery. However, the first killing is a decapitation, which can be kind of shocking or frightening. Also, during the course of the game, some of the players get injured. And I mean, watching it, you kind of expect that to happen with some of these physical obstacles and games that they go through. But I mean, it might be hard to watch because of how much people just fall over and get hurt. When we're talking about language, there are some uses of minor curse words as well as censored stronger curse words due to kind of like the nonchalant delivery and some like clever censoring. It's difficult to make out even what sort of strong curse words are used. For suggestive material, really, we're just talking about like the reality aspect of the game. Some players have sensual language that they use. Some of the clues regarding the killer's identity can be a little risque. Some of them are like just pretty inappropriate. But apart from like general speech, the show doesn't really have a lot that's suggestive and graphic. That being said, though, there are kind of two exceptions here. As the show is shot candidly, it is a reality show. There are scenes of contestants in swimwear. However, in editing, they have put censor blurs over certain players, which I really appreciated. I thought it was super respectful.
Yeah, that was really good.
And then even later in the later episodes, there were certain costume changes too that kind of made it easier to respect the contestants. With that being said, kind of like the second exception, the second thing that is kind of just worth mentioning as far as just people and their bodies and respecting them. Just because there's like this mindfulness, it doesn't mean that there aren't revealing outfits. There is one scene in the show that's pretty out there compared to everything else that they've done to respect the players on the show. It's a really short scene, but still, it might take people by surprise. There's also a contestant who ends up twerking, and it's something that's fairly brief and played off to be comedic, but it's still unfortunate and something that we thought that people should be aware of.
Yeah, and a lot of topless men, topless buff men.
A lot of flexing guys, if that's something that bothers you.
Yeah.
Lastly, like, this is a game show that's based just really staged games and fake killings. But how the people react and feel during these games is very real and candid. This is important, as one aspect of the game is finding which player is the killer and therefore lying to everyone. So some games intentionally are built to cause strife and division. One game was especially bothersome, as speech that was considered to be like private and to themselves had been recorded by hidden cameras. And then it's read aloud by the players for everybody to guess the one who had said it. This resulted in a hard-to-watch scene where people are just being hurt by all the things that they've said in private about one another, and one player does weep about the emotional pain. So just because it's all a game doesn't mean that each game is moral or that it isn't going to affect the emotions of the people involved.
Yeah. And as always, our favorite part of a podcast, of all content creation, is a call to action. And we're going to blaze through this, baby, because the faster you go, the cooler it is. Basically, if you really, really like the show, you can leave a review on iTunes, Podchaser, wherever you listen. We really appreciate it. If you don't like the show, you can also leave a review. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but you can do it if you want. But if you really like the show, please, please do it. That's where I'll tell you what to do. You can follow our social media, Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram, wherever you are at. We are most likely there too. And you can join our Facebook group titled Cinematic Doctrine Group. That place is popping. You can check out our other shows under the same feed, Trailer Talk and Monthly Movie News. You can get them right under wherever you're listening to Cinematic Doctrine. They're just for other movie-related content. Trailer Talk will pretty much just be whatever trailers are going on. Monthly Movie News is really just interviews sometimes, or just talking about specific things that are going on in the industry and where we think things are headed. Check out our website, cinematicdoctrine.com, for some written content on movie topics and trailers. Just recently put out a piece about YouTube and how YouTube's advertisements are just really, really, really bad. They're being exploited for gambling. Some images used in the kind of like inline YouTube advertisements are just downright inappropriate. And I sort of wrote about that experience. YouTube doesn't sometimes seem like cinematic content, but I mean, so much content is produced through, so much visual content is produced through YouTube. So it's an important piece. Otherwise, you can also catch up on trailers on the website as well. We do post about the trailers about a day or two after the trailer will drop. Trailer talk on the podcast is great. You can always plug in there. But if you want something quick, website's where to be, cinematicdoctrine.com. Then you can always support us on Patreon.
Money please.
Money, please. You get access to a lot of really cool perks for $3 a month if you support us on Patreon. Basically, you can get exclusive voting privileges for deciding a movie we discuss in the podcast at the end of each month. You also get access to an exclusive podcast show called The Pre-Show, which is a lot more free-form discussions on movies, Christianity, life discussions. It's just a good time. Just chill. Just talking. Because podcasting just needs more chill dudes talking. Am I right? Oh, I'm so right.
More bearded guys, please.
I love it. We're finally getting into this, though. Killer Camp. What the heck is Killer Camp? I got to know what Killer Camp is. I just want to know. It's not Survivor Camp. It's not Summer Camp. It's Killer Camp. Catherine, tell me about your experience with Killer Camp. No spoilers. You're not allowed to do it. We're doing spoilers later. No spoilers. But tell me about Killer Camp.
Okay. So the easiest way that I can relate Killer Camp to anything I've ever seen before is to think back to being probably 11 or 12, watching Cartoon Network and watching way too much Total Drama Island. That's like a good jumping point for like my entire experience with reality TV, reality game shows.
Is Total Drama Island a reality game show?
Total Drama Island, the premise is it's an animated show where there's like 20 people that get sent to an island. And they're told, hey, you have to do all of these dumb games. You have to win all these different physical obstacles. You have to figure out which one of you is the best one to win this giant cash prize. So that's pretty much my entire experience with like the game show life is watching a cartoon.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, like that's my experience with it. As we briefly mentioned before, Killer Camp is a reality TV game show where there are 11 British campers that are sent to this cabin in the woods to play games, win prizes, to hopefully go home a little bit richer. But the twist is that there's a psychopath in the woods that's looking to meticulously murder them one by one. And one of their fellow campers is a traitor that is in control of said psychopathic killer.
So how did you enjoy that? Like, was that sort of gimmick, like, did you find that that gimmick drew you in, that idea of this massive whodunit while they're completing games?
Normally, this wouldn't be something that I would go out of my way to watch, but even just the premise being, you know, Friday the 13th, but a game show was enough for me to be like, oh, I think I'm kind of interested. Thinking that maybe it would be a little more aesthetically in line with what I've come to expect from like campier cult horror things. And also another thing that surprisingly hooked me while I was watching this was the social analytical aspect of things. This really was one of my first forays into watching something like this. So I guess I kind of knew by proxy, but I hadn't really experienced just how engaging it can be drawn into this scenario and to be overtly just observing and studying the actions and reactions of people and kind of making assumptions about it, about how things would play out or whether or not someone was or wasn't the killer or someone was or wasn't being honest or... So I think that really drew me in. I really do think like as human beings, we're hardwired to want to be relational, to want to be social. And I think we also just want to have a good understanding of the world around us and the people in it. So I can see where it would be like very entertaining and rewarding to make these kind of predictions about people based on what we're observing and what we're watching. And I could see how people who do enjoy reality TV like this would be more willing to want to tune in each week just to see if like their predictions are right.
Yeah, that like invitation for us as viewers to join in the into the whodunit, where we know the rules just as much as the players, and as the person who's editing this show together, is presenting it to us, we're basically participating with them. We're not playing the games. We cheer for people. We cheer for teams. But we're also aware that, like, one of these guys is the killer. One of these guys is trying to take money from players. One of the key aspects of the gameplay that they're trying to do is that when the first game they do is like a camp-wide game to complete. And they say if the camp can work together, they'll get more money. But remember, there's a killer in amongst you. And the killer is going to purposely sabotage the game because the money you don't make as a camp will be given to the killer instead. But of course, the killer has to be careful because if they're just obviously sabotaging the game, then everyone's going to go, oh, he's the killer. And people who play video games right now are probably playing Among Us right now. And Among Us is entirely about completing objectives together. Oh, by the way, one of you is trying to kill all of us. And so it's like trying to complete objectives and win while also maybe you can win by finding who the killer is. And then the killer has different objectives. It's all like, it is a compelling mechanic to watch. It's not just watching like British Bake Off where it's like, is he going to make a better cake? I don't know. Why do I care? I don't get to eat it anyway. This is like, I actually get to participate by like, I'm watching everybody too. You know what I mean? I thought that was really compelling.
Yeah. I mean, and I can see where this is definitely more accessible because like watching a baking show, I'm over there going like, yeah, man, that meringue's never going to work. But like, that's because that's like a specified kind of knowledge. Or even like, there's this expression among people who watch shows like that, that like, as you're watching this kind of hobby competition, you start to pick up on the knowledge too of like, you start to become like in tune with what's being done. And I think even with something like this, like, I do agree, like it's a lot easier to participate because you're just watching people and you're trying to read people and you're trying to make these like informed guesses about things. But yeah, I mean, like I was even just kind of like struck with the idea of like someone who's going to be sabotaging things. So I mean, immediately you're looking and you're like, okay, who is it? Who is it?
Who's not carrying their weight? Who's the blister who shows up when the work's done? It's them.
And then sometimes you're like, oh, are they just really like not that great at that game? Because I have stuff like that. So I mean, you're constantly second guessing yourself. You're looking for people. You're in on it too.
Yeah.
And so I was over there just, especially towards the end, going, oh, that's definitely the killer. Like, just look at their face. And I mean, like, I've never met these guys. I've never met these people. And yet I'm making these assumptions based off of like, just
how they carry themselves.
They carry themselves. Yeah. And I mean,
yeah,
it's so funny because in Killer Camp, there's even this scene where these people have known each other for like 2 days. And you know, the one guy makes a joke and he's like, man, it seems like you guys are really getting along. You know, you do know you've only known each other 2 days. And so, I mean, I think us as the audience too, it's like, you've only known these people 20 minutes and from what it's edited to you. But I do think that there's something fun about that, about being able to be in on it too.
You're kind of touching on something that makes it hard to watch at times. And that's, we're disconnected from it. We're not participating in there. Mm-hmm. Any of our reactions don't reach them. And Lord willing, our reactions are balanced and not slanderous. Although I do know some people, when it comes to reality television, that's what they feed on. They feed on being slanderous. They feed on watching people be stupid for their own sake to go, I'm smarter than that. I think it's, frankly, you and I didn't do that while watching this, because you kind of have to be pretty smart to play this game. You have to be deceptive. You have to be intelligent in investigation. There's a lot of intelligence that's required in this game. In fact, I would say like Killer Clam as a game show. It is now a SpongeBob spinoff game show, Killer Clam. The thing about this is that they have to, like, it is about the game. It is about the mechanics of the game. And I think as a gamer, that fascinates me, because good, strong mechanics are always good. That's why whodunit video games, when they're good, are really good. That's why Among Us is huge. That's why youth groups play Mafia. That's why, man, Town of Salem was the other game, I think, on PC. So it's like, that's why people like those things. And so there is a required enjoyment. However, there is also the fact that, like, while you can play Mafia in your youth group, or while you could probably hit up your squad and play Among Us and like not be mean to each other or unkind or make opinions about each other based on how they play those mechanics, it's pretty clear watching Killer Camp that certain players, knowing that there's a cash prize and then also knowing that there is deception taking place for 5 days,
mm-hmm.
not just one game session that's 20 minutes, but 5 days.
Yeah.
It is very easy for the players at certain points to get very intense and very rude. And I mean, we mentioned in the content awareness, and we felt it was important enough to mention in the content awareness that there is like, there's genuine deception games, or I'm sorry, division games, like for the purpose of dividing players, yeah. which I'll say this. I don't mind a mechanic that reveals clues or division in a non-slanderous way, but the particular game was literally, here's a piece of paper of something slanderous somebody said,
say it out loud,
pin it on the wall and say who it is, try and guess who it is. So if even if you guess wrong, the person who you guessed wrong is going to be like, you think I would say that, and it causes division. That's just not good. that's extremely not good. So I guess really, like, what do you feel? How do you feel about that? Like, knowing that, like, part of this game's mechanics or division, part of the game makers made it so that there's a division game. And then also knowing, like, people watching this are at risk of participating in the slanderous division. Like, what does that feel like, Catherine?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I notice, like, just where this can be so incredibly dangerous for, like, even like not only for the contestants, but for the viewer, putting it, yes, like in your shoes, as you're making these like informed observations and things about people. Ultimately, I say informed observations, but at the end of the day, another word for it is like judgment. Like, you're making these judgments on these people, on these total strangers, and you're inputting your biases without any sort of consequence. Like, even that game that you've mentioned where they're saying these slanderous things about each other or perpetuating this gossip, like,
yeah,
you get to witness them have a consequence for that. I mean, as sad as it is, like, people are in tears and people are saying, yeah, how could you believe that I would say that? Or people are saying, like, yeah, I said it, and having to come to face with like the real effects of just speaking poorly about your neighbor. But as the viewer, like, you don't get any of that like pushback or consequence. In fact, like, even in some circles, like on Twitter and things, like, I mean, there are entire hashtags dedicated to like, what are the Kardashians doing? Or
right,
like,
or it's just straight up slander.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And so, I mean, I think in a way, it's not really surprising that this entire game show is built on the crux of like manipulating this inclination to judge other people. It's, as a game show, like, it's already created that environment that it pits people against each other as they're like perpetuating this gossip, as they're mistrusting each other more and more. And they're excusing it with like, oh, there's a chance to win money, or, oh, it's a deception game, or, oh, it's a whodunit. But I do think that like, just naturally, this show in particular is taking like a part of what probably their viewer base is looking for, which is like this very easy to follow, make quick judgments sort of scenario. Like, even the opening sequence of the show is all of the characters getting off a bus, and right away it's like just watching a ton of high schoolers, and like everyone has their own little name.
Yeah, the jock.
The jock.
The vegan.
That
was
vegan.
The best one.
But, yeah.
And he like jumps off the bus in success. It's like, I love, yeah, it. The vegan.
Yeah. And so like, I mean, right away, it's already kind of, I think it's self-aware, like it's playing on these things.
Yeah.
But it's still,
absolutely,
it's still profiting from like what's there. So like, I mean, I don't want to downplay any of that. I don't feel like necessarily like morally wrong for having watched it or anything like that. But I do think that there's like a sort of moral grayness that can show up with this sort of thing that leaves me just as a viewer, like, more comfortable sitting back and watching Parks and Rec.
Yeah, like scripted TV in general, because scripted unkindness, which can still be challenging, the benefit of it is that they're not actually being unkind, they're acting. Lord willing, behind the scenes, they're doing great. They're having a good time. The only time in a scripted thing, in a scripted piece, does that bother me is if they have like a, let's say like a large actor come in and they're playing a character who gets abused verbally for being fat. Mm-hmm. I don't like that. That has never made me comfortable. I do not enjoy that kind of treatment of actors. I think that it just makes me sad. I know that there are some cases where people are we're all in this together kind of thing, and everyone's just cool with it. It's a paycheck. It's not real. But, I mean, it still hurts a little.
Yeah.
But I will say there are parts, though, where, like, we participated not so much in the slander, but in sort of the rhetoric of the game. So, for instance, in our notes, I wrote down Queen Eleanor, and it's something I've been saying for the last several days. And basically, there's no spoilers here at all. This is the first episode. Everybody just starts to say, oh, I think Eleanor is the killer. And Eleanor's like, we just got here. We don't know anything about each other.
Like, come on, guys.
Like, I just got here. I don't know anybody here. And now everyone hates me. And it's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like, I feel bad for you. I mean, you might be the killer. I don't know. But, like, I feel bad for you. And then it gets to the point where I'm like, oh, she's such a queen, though, because she, like, if she is the killer, that'd be awesome.
And, like, she's handling all this like a champ.
Yeah, like, and so you start to, like, that's, I think, to me is evidence of, like, just the fact that I'm so excited about it that I've titled her Queen Eleanor. Nobody even says that in the show. I'm just like, she just is so, she's got, like, an energy for, like, yeah, I can take this. It's so funny. I think it's a balance is really what it gets down to. It's like you kind of have to be able to balance when it's wrong, because gossip and slander is wrong. Whether that's me watching people on TV playing a game where they should know better, or at your workplace, it is still bad. It is painful. It is sad. And thankfully, there was a form of reconciliation that took place on screen between the character that was weeping and the character who said the thing that was mean to them. They hugged it out. That was really sweet. But it was still just like, what an unneeded point of hurt and shame. And honestly, there could be a point made that, like, that's game shows, you know, like, what unneeded unkindness to dangle money in front of people and say, you got to do this game. I mean, people who hate work righteousness, of which Christians should, but, like, vehemently hate it, are going to be like, I hate game shows because that's what it breeds.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of. I mean, game shows are different. There is something fun and exciting about it, and I think there's fair ground for it. I mean, why else do we have a good time getting together with bros and playing a game and basically being like, you get candy in the end? Like, the problem comes when, and I'll even just draw from an experience of mine. I got together with some guys to play Halo one time. I love playing Halo. I wreck. At least in this friend group, I'd kill it. I am the player in the
friend
group.
You're good at video games.
Hey, I got a wife out of playing video games. So yeah, I'd say I'm pretty good. That's fine. But I'm basically the player that people have to wait against. They're like, if Melvin's on that team, we gotta put him with players that are, you know, it's going to be balanced. And I was against another guy who, when I wasn't in the group, was probably the best in the group. But then I got there and this guy could not handle losing. I don't like thinking about it because it makes me mad. Not because I got mad at him. I was pretty chill about it. Well, I'll say this. I thought I was chill, but some people who are competitive hate when people are chill because they're like, oh, you're looking down on me. But basically this guy was like getting mad. He was saying things like, well, I don't play video games all the time. Little tip for the side, I don't play Halo a lot. At least then I didn't. I was like, oh, guys, I haven't played Halo in a long time. Thanks for inviting me over. This is such a swell time. I cannot wait to build good memories with my brothers. And then I go there, and this guy's losing it. And it got to a point where I was like, does nobody say, like, brother, we need to step outside for a minute. We need to talk. I've done that before. I remember going to a buddy's house for football. It was a Super Bowl, and this guy, I mean, Catherine, you were there. This guy was losing it. He was getting mad. He was screaming, flipping off the screen. This is a brother in Christ. And he was just in a moment of weakness. And I was like, dude, if we got to turn this off for your sake, we will. And we were at his house and he understood what was at cost. Basically, he was like, my competitive nature is putting me in a position of sin.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of stuff behind that that makes people feel like they need to win to feel satisfaction or joy or value. But the point I'm really trying to get at is that it is very easy for games to cause strife on their own, that you do not need a deceptive game like this to breed that.
Yeah, no, I've seen way too many people cry over a game of Monopoly.
Yeah, oh like, my gosh, yeah. Yes! Like, my word! Oh, man. That's why even without house rules, people cry over Monopoly. It's wild. House rules, it takes 2 billion years to play Monopoly. All that to say is, I think as we move into our trivia section, is this game that I keep saying game, because I mean, it is a game. Mm-hmm. Like we basically played the game with everybody on the show, just not nearly to the degree of stress and anxiety they had. This show, Killer Camp, is just a fascinating show. I'll say that. I think it's incredibly entertaining at times. I think if you watch it with friends, you have a good time just sort of like digging into like, who is it? Like Catherine and I were just talking about who do we think it is. We watched this over the course of 2 days, but like every episode we'd pause and just like work through things. And so it's really, really fun. The flavor of it being a campground is so exciting and just goofy. And there's a killer on the loose and it's just so campy and great, pun intended. But there are times that are just tough to watch because it's like, man, these people are being nasty to each other. There is just flippant sin taking place that makes it really hard to watch, where people are not being loving and patient. I understand what's at cost. It's a fair amount of money, and that's important. They're all millennials, so they know that money can really help out with rent cost. And this was pre-COVID, so you know that it's just like, man, they could be using that money right now. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I get it, but that doesn't excuse it, is what I'm saying. But where do you land on this, Kat? Like, do you think, like, before we go into trivia, like, do you think that this show is viable for a fun time to watch, even when persevering through fairly uncomfortably slanderous sections?
I mean, I think it's up to the individual's discretion, because I mean, while I had a good time with maybe the campier parts of it, or even in some ways like the competitive nature of like just wondering like who's going to win it, who's going to, not necessarily that it was money, but like seeing who is like,
right,
who is going to persevere.
Yeah, it's almost more exciting to find out who the killer is. Will the contestants find out who the killer is, or will the killer survive? I almost like didn't really care about the money anymore. In fact, dropping the money from the game probably would have saved a lot of strife. Because to me, I'm like, I just want to play this. I will sign up to go do this. I will pay money to do it. You don't have to pay me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the competitive nature was really, really interesting to me. I do think it is something where each individual person is going to have to decide for their comfort level. For me personally, I wouldn't rush to watch another show like this anytime soon. But I think that's just my personal sort of landing on it, because I feel a lot more uncomfortable watching something that has the potential to really, you know, ruin someone's self-esteem or their trust in others.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
if it's just downright slanderous. I mean, there are some shows where you and I, Melvin, have just dropped because it's perpetuating this kind of, I mean, you say it all the
it's
time.
It's just mean.
This mean-spirited sort of gossip and stuff. And I mean, I honestly experience enough of that in the relationships I have around me. Like, why would I want to watch more of that?
Yeah, like we dropped Lady Dynamite with, I forget the woman, the comedian who did that. She's very funny. And there were really funny scenes in the show. One of them, got us weeping. It was so funny. And it was just a stinger at the end of the episode. But like, they were just, there were just characters, and this is scripted, that characters that were just being so mean to each mm-hmm. other. It's like, do I need that? Like, no, I don't think I need that in my life. I love laughing. I love comedy, but I don't like mean-spirited. We tried Always Sunny for a bit, mm-hmm. and it was like at some point the mean-spiritedness didn't trump the cleverness, because some dark humor can be clever, but dark humor that is mean-spirited is just like not funny, not entertaining, not to me at least. I don't think it makes the spirit happy in my heart. So yeah, I totally get you on that one. I would watch another season of Killer Camp. I don't know if I would be watching other reality shows that have the potential for as much gossip and slander and unkindness, but maybe within the gimmick of this show and cleaning out that one horribly nasty game where they're just like, hey, remember that slanderous thing you said that you shouldn't have said? Well, now we're going to tell everybody you said it. It's like, I don't want that game. You can get rid of that game.
Yeah. Maybe some of the killer clues can have less to do with just inappropriate stuff.
Yeah, that was annoying. Why can't we just get more scenes of people shoving hot dogs in each other's mouths and then they get money for it? That was cool. Or there is we didn't even talk about the games. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I guess we'll talk about the games in the spoiler section. Oh, stick around for spoilers for a reality show. Well, I guess there really is. I mean, you don't know who the killer is, but I'll say that there was another game. Actually, the same one as the hot dog one, where people had to eat an onion milkshake.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, yuck. All right. So, but that's a good transition for our trivia section. We'll be, and again, the trivia section, it's just a spoiler warning here. We're not going into spoilers. Now, for this show, I guess we could tell you what a spoiler actually constitutes. It would be style of games, who wins games, who the killer is, who gets killed, stuff like that. We won't dig into until the spoiler warning is lifted. For the trivia section, you're good, man. You can keep listening. We'll give you the okay when it's time to move on to another podcast in case you want to check out Killer Camp and Going Blind. But if you don't care about Killer Camp, you know, just keep that button on play and you'll get right through this. So first line of trivia here. One key aspect of Killer Camp is that it was originally sold as a summer camp competitive reality game to each contestant. Then, after each contestant reached the lodge, someone was just killed in the lake by a huge explosion. This was done to get genuine reactions out of the players. Of course, obviously, it's through stunts, but basically all the contestants were like, what just happened? In fact, we joked about Eleanor being blamed. Basically, Eleanor just laughs. She has a nervous laugh to someone just blowing up in the middle of the lake. So then that's, of course, why everyone's like, she laughed at someone dying. Eleanor must be it. Praise Queen Eleanor. She's the best. But yeah, this was done to get genuine reactions. And following this, they would just reveal to everyone that the summer camp reality game show was actually a killer camp reality game show. Now, understanding that some contestants may not be comfortable with the bait and switch from summer camp to killer camp, there were replacements on standby that could step in as new contestants. They would, of course, have to do something to edit out the, not real reactions, or just have to shoot the whole thing again. But they had those ready. It didn't seem like they had any stand-ins come in. But I when we started the show and I knew that was the gimmick, I was like, is this like they say it on the beginning of every episode. These contestants were told that it was summer camp, but it was actually killer camp. And I was like, don't they have to like sign contracts in the beginning? What's like the thing? Like, how did they legally do that? And I was like, it must not be true, but I guess it is. So I don't know.
So something that I had read during like looking up trivia was that they actually had to have double releases. My understanding was that once they got to the reveal, they had to sign the second release if they continued on.
Catherine, what else do we got on trivia?
So the set department that developed the lodge purposely gave it like an 80s Americana kind of vibe. Yeah, I mean, complete with Native American decorations, the hunting trophies all over the place. Even the Camp Pleasant logo, flag, sweater, and all the other memorabilia was produced for an authentic 80s vibe.
I really want the Camp Pleasant sweater. It looked really comfy.
It looks really cozy.
Yeah, it had like super long sleeves.
It was bright yellow.
Yeah, it was awesome. What a great aesthetic. So yeah, moving on, we have the, as for like the location specifically, most watching would, you know, assume that the show is shot in England. Every contestant is English after all. But the show was actually shot in Lithuania. As the show was filmed during summer, there were extremely long days and intensely short nights. As such, shooting didn't begin until the early afternoon and end until late at night, sometimes as late as 2 a.m., as the nighttime campfire scenes required a good, dark, moody lighting style. Alongside this, the weather was incredibly intense to the point that it could turn into a torrential storm at any minute. Entire game sets would be moved around or relocated, and even during the pre-production stage of developing each game type, it was encouraged to find games that could work both inside, outside, in the sun, or in the rain. But in the show, it looked like it just rained a lot. And I even, you know, when we were watching it, I questioned, like, are they shooting in winter? Because everybody's wearing sweaters, and it looks really wet and cold out there. And nope, it was just, it's just really rainy. So
yeah,
that's kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think it added to the mood of it being a horror show, though, because you've got all these rainy nights and these nice lightning, like
miserable,
shots. Yeah,
maybe even humid, so it's just uncomfortable. Ugh, it's
gross.
So good, all the stuff you love.
Yeah, kind of moving down to the next little bit of trivia here. One key aspect of the show Killer Camp is that the show features movie-style murders where a masked psychopath kills each contestant that is voted off of the game. And by voted off, we mean that the killer consciously chose which player to move to remove from the game. As such, shooting the murder scenes of each participant voted off of the game also required effective time management, as they only had about like 6 hours to shoot in the best night lighting. To make sure this worked out well, Mike Parker used two cameras for each murder scene to catch different angles for editing, as well as gave contestants information to educate them on what would look best for the shoot and what to expect during the shoot, kind of guiding their reactions, and also leaving out some of the details to ensure that their response, you know, while they were being murdered, was pretty candid and genuine.
Yeah, and I always thought that was cute because, like, these people aren't actors. You know, so like they're just kind of like, oh, I get to be in like a little short film where I get killed. And there is sort of some interesting, like when it comes to filmmaking, actors sometimes like being the character getting killed. It's probably because it's a little more fun to just have all the doohickeys and the gadgets to make the blood and all the fun stuff there. And like we don't, and some people just want to get out of their franchise, like Han Solo. Harrison Ford just wanted to die like six Star Wars movies ago. So it's just like, yeah, I poor guy just wanted to be out of there. And lastly, one fun detail regarding the show is that when it originally aired in the UK in 2019, it was a 5-night special leading up to Halloween. So that's really cute
and very spooky. Ooh.
So that's pretty much it for our trivia. And that means we're done avoiding spoilers. So Kat and I are going to finally get into spoilers. So if you need to move on to another podcast or you, cause you just want to catch killer camp on CW TV by yourself, by all means, go ahead, check out literally anything else. Check out what's on your feed. That'd be great. But if you're sticking around, you know, do know we are going to be getting into who dies. We're going to be getting into all the specifics. Maybe, I mean, honestly, I think we've mostly covered everything we want, but we like to leave the little bit of time for some specific spoilers and kind of how we reacted. So, Catherine, spoilers are unveiled. We can just talk about whatever we want. We can talk about who we thought was the killer. We can talk about who was the killer. We can talk about, incoming spoiler, that there were two killers the whole time.
Can you believe it?
What the heck? Can you believe that? Okay, well, why don't you do this for us? First, Catherine, tell us, did Queen Eleanor die?
No. Well, actually, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. the show ends and it was like, well, we can't let them leave the camp.
And then it just cuts.
You're like, what? Well, to anybody listening, Queen Eleanor does make it to the end, but it is a bit nuanced because that's not the only thing that happens. Catherine, does the camp or the killer win?
Oof. So I think it's kind of weighted that there were two killers, but the killer wins.
Ugh.
And you'll never believe it, but the killer, well, one of the killers was who you would have expected pretty much all along, at least if you were me.
Yeah, I'm assuming you're talking about the movie guy. There was one guy who just loved movies and even kind of had like a line that was not even a line. It was just candid, but he's basically talking like a scene from Scream where in Scream, a character says, well, you can always tell who's going to survive and who's the killer based on these tropes. And then he goes ahead and starts talking about the tropes. So you're talking about him, right? Because that's the obvious, like, it's not obvious, but that's the one where you're like, of course he's the killer.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that was kind of like a first instinct thing. But even the second killer, the like strong jock guy, I was
the
like,
Chad named Carl,
the Chad named Carl, but he still has the Letterman jacket with like the giant C on it for Chad.
So he's just Chad.
It's just Chad. But like, even just looking at the cast of characters, looking at that particular character, I'm like, you know, this is probably really dumb, but he looks a lot like the handyman, Randy or whatever.
Bruce.
The handyman Bruce, who goes around and, you know, kills all the campers. And I was like, it's not the same person, sure, but like, isn't it a little uncanny that like they look a lot alike? If you threw a flannel on him, like,
Yeah, so the killers were the movie guy and the Chad at this point. The two of them teamed up. I mean, I guess we don't really know if they knew that they were both killers. We don't really know if they were working together. I guess they probably were.
In the final episode, when Carl is retelling how he won as the killer, he said that there was a point in the game where he had to sacrifice Rob or something.
That's right. Yes. So they did know that they were both.
That's my memory.
Yeah. And his name was Rob. That's right. And I remember now because, so basically there's a scene where everyone is blaming Rob. And then Carl also blames Rob for the killer. Carl was very good at sneaking around and sort of getting people to leave him alone. And then one of those cases was voting for Rob, the killer, to be killed. And even advocating that it was Rob. Carl said, I needed to vote Rob off to acquit myself and for the sake of winning as a killer. A little scummy because it wasn't clear if the killers as together would take money or if it was only the surviving killer. I couldn't figure that out. But there was a game of Mafia I played one time that this exact same thing happened. So in Mafia, there's the townspeople, the detective who can point at somebody. And if they point at the right player, they get notified, yes, that is a Mafia. And then the Mafia who then just kills people. And the whole objective is the townspeople and the detective, or the townspeople using the help of the detective, can find out who the Mafia is and win. And I said to the Mafia player during our time, we both need to lie and say we're a detective, and we both need to point at each other and basically say each other's Mafia. One of us is going to get killed, but what's going to happen is when one of us dies and it's notified, yes, we are Mafia, the other person is going to be coming across as detective and it'll be clarified, yes, he must be detective because when that person died, the other person was a Mafia. So it must be true. So anyways, the other player gets killed and I'm still in game. It comes out that person's Mafia. So now everyone thinks I'm the detective, which means the real detective is just like, oh, what? And so then the next round, the real detective is like, no, I'm the real detective. Melvin's Mafia. And I'm like, how is that possible? I'm the detective. He was Mafia.
No, I'm Dirty Dan.
Like, exactly. Now, obviously, I'm Mafia, but the whole point is we on the Mafia had to just do this early to confirm that the Mafia would win. Skipping to the end, we won. The detective was the last we killed the detective, but it was wild. So I got it. I understood why Carl did that. It was just Yeah, it was wild. All that really matters in the spoiler section was that. That's all I wanted to say, is that I did the same thing in Mafia once, and it was great. One of the only happy memories I have of youth group. a little sad. Huh? But yeah, that's literally all I wanted to talk about in the spoiler section was that. And I'm glad you reminded me, because I completely forgot. I was like, what are we going to talk about here? All that matters is Queen Eleanor and... .. So, and the vegan. I loved everything. Sam, that's Sam. His name. Everything about Sam was great. Oh, broke my heart that they voted Sam out. They were like, Sam's the killer. And Sam's like, I'm not the killer. I swear.
You know, just as you, my love, are the person in the mafia game that goes, no, we got to lynch each other. I am the person that's altruistic, and I'm like, no, guys, no, I promise, I am here to help.
Just here to have a good time and be nice. Like, what was that one line Sam had? Sam, like, everyone knew Sam was just super nice, and I think even, like, the only nasty thing, like, what was it, during the gossip game, somebody said, like, Sam is too nice and it gets annoying.
Yeah.
And then, like, it cuts to Sam, and he just goes, that's all right, I understand, it makes sense. And you're like, so Sam is so nice.
Or like,
and like, I mean, everybody turns on him, and you're like, why?
Well, in the final circle, even as they're all like giving their last like thing that they can say, and the tensions are high. Like,
yeah, they're saying like, this is the reason I'm voting for this person, and then they say, I am voting for
so and so,
and you're like, what?
But no, but I mean, like, even Sam, he's like, guys, you know, I'm just going to say I worked really hard today. I chugged an entire onion milkshake.
Oh, yeah.
I won you guys all this money. I promise I'm not the person who's like trying to do you in. And I will be pretty bummed out for you and for all of us if you vote me off.
Yeah.
And he's laying his heart out. He's telling the total truth. He's looking everyone in the eyes. This guy is just sincere. He probably still smells like onions and soy milk. Everybody is just like dead set. Like, oh no, we're going to follow Carl and say that Sam is like definitely
tried so hard, got so far. But in the end, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, I mean, like, he doesn't even lie about, like, the final clues or anything. He's just, he's dead straight. But like the final clue, is too specific. Like, a lot of the clues were really, really goofy.
Right.
Like, the killer's favorite food is, or the killer secretly listens to Avril Lavigne, or...
But then,
like,
yeah, Sam
But then the
gets...
very specific Ugh. One is, like, the last one that Sam gets is... The killer goes to the gym 5 days a week.
And here's Carl jacked and ripped.
Yeah.
And Sam's like, literally everybody thinks I'm the killer. This is the clue that I get. They're going to think I made it up.
Yeah.
But I didn't. This is what I got. Like, there is, it was, oh my gosh, my love. It was just killer to watch. It was like, we finished it and we're like, I can't believe it. And, like, you called it. We were on, like, episode 4, and you're like, I think it's Carl. Carl is schmoozing up to everybody.
Yeah.
He's interested in this girl that he's only met for, like, 3 days,
yeah.
5 days at summer camp, like everyone does.
Like youth group.
And it's just like, this is, I can't believe it. We all fell into it, except you, Kat. You were like, no, I think it's Carl. Yeah. It's not Sam. Sam is too nice.
And, like, I feel bad, too, because, like, a lot of times just looking at it from an outside perspective, I was like, I wonder if it's literally just because of how these people
physically look,
present themselves, or how they look,
yeah.
how they physically look. Like, Sam's this honest to goodness salt of the earth teddy bear, but he has these tattoos,
right? So it's easy for somebody to see him and profile him.
Yeah.
But then, like, you watch all 5 episodes, you're like, Sam is like the nicest guy here. Sam and Jacques,
yeah,
they're just like these super chill, kind guys. And what was her name? Ruby?
Rosie.
What was her name? Rosie. Rosie. They're like, all three of them were just so nice. And like, it's just like, it's so sad. But yeah, like that idea of like, is he being
sin do be like that?
Sin do be like that. Yeah. It's like, is Sam being profiled here? Is it because Carl's just sort of a physically fit, normal looking dude? And like, even just my vernacular, they're normal. It's like, oh, it's just makes my heart hurt. Like, yeah, I thought the same thing too, because it is easy to watch a reality show and make those judgment calls. But like I said, I mean, everyone was pretty chill. Like, the biggest issue with the show was the gossip and slander, but like, nobody really went out of their way to be a jerk, if that makes sense. I don't know if maybe this is, I guess anybody who's listening has watched Killer Camp or doesn't care about spoilers and is at this point, what a waste of a good like whodunit to get to this point and not watch the show though. But like, if you've watched reality shows and then you've watched Killer Camp, is this like chiller than other shows, or is this like on par with other shows in terms of gossip slander? Like, where does this land? I'd like to know. Please send an email, because cinematicdoctrine@gmail.com. There you go, boys. Because yeah, this was totally new territory for Kat and I. We watch movies, and then Kat watches TV shows when I'm not home. So
yeah, the last thing I think I watched, like show wise, all the episodes was Series of Unfortunate Events, the Netflix version.
And like, I am not okay with this. Like, yeah. Once. Yeah, that was like it. Yeah. So where do you land on it then? I guess finally closing this out. You have a good time with Killer Camp? Was it cool? Was it not? How you feeling?
I mean, I think everything being said, like, I had a good time with it. It was a step outside of my comfort zone.
A good one or a bad one?
An okay one. I mean, I like the gimmick of it being horror. I like the whodunit aspect of it. So yeah, I mean, like, I don't regret it or anything, but I mean, that makes it sound really bad.
It's okay. If that's how you feel, that's how you feel.
Not like really bad, but like, yeah, I mean, I don't regret having watched it, but I do think I'll take a little break before going into anything reality based as far as shows go again.
Yeah, I'm not interested in really watching other reality shows. It's not my interest. I mean, I will say, like, this game, I keep saying it, but I don't mind saying it because it really is that. I mean, it was like watching Twitch, except it was like real people. So like, it was really interesting. This gimmick and this show and this game show convinced me of what makes this sort of media fascinating and enjoyable. Because I was engaged. If this was like, if I was a boomer and I had cable and I really just latched at the opportunity to waste $170 a month on channels I won't watch and commercials and all that jazz, then I would be like, this is killer. I would call up my buddies at the nursing home and I would just be like, you watching this? These millennials, they're having a blast. And I am too. But like, in any other circumstance other than like having to find a show and just being like, well, this is fascinating, I don't think I ever would have watched it. And I'll say this, I feel better for it. Because it was really cool to be introduced to something that I've just never watched before. And quite literally, in other circumstances, would never watch. Like, I watch streaming shows and YouTube and some Twitch streams because my friends Twitch stream. That's it. I don't have a lot of exposure to this kind of media. I don't have an exposure to reality shows. And it was really cool to venture into it. I was not comfortable with everything in it. I, like I said, the slander and stuff, not conducive to my way of life. But the surrounding things and the positives of the show itself were some really high positives. In fact, this was probably one of the most fun things to watch for the show, quite frankly. I have not had so much fun watching this, eating mug brownies and kettle corn, than like, what, a ghost story? I love a ghost story, but like, I wasn't laughing and speculating while watching Ghost Story. I was meditating and brooding. Or even She Dies Tomorrow, my goodness. Or Tenet, my ears getting blown out. Like, all that stuff. So yeah, I had a great time. Like you, I'm probably not going back anytime soon. I'd probably watch another season of Killer Camp, and Queen Eleanor should be the moderator for the next one. That'd be great. They thought I was the killer from the start. now I am the killer. And she's like running around killing camp counselors or something. I don't know. That's what I want. That's my dream.
It's your dream, sir. So final question. Is this going to be the gateway drug that gets you to watch the Great British Baking Show with me and Churl?
Not at all. Never. I couldn't. I fell asleep when you guys had that on. I actually was trying to go to sleep when you had it on. I was laying behind a couch in like a comforter, and I'm like, I just want to go to bed. And like, you guys are just talking all night watching it.
What so, a no, boomer not... move.
We could watch The Floor is Lava. I know Daniel wanted to cover it. Oh, man. Thanks so much for checking out this episode on Killer Camp. Now, if you've seen Killer Camp, what did you think of it? Was this reality game show a lot of fun, or does the slander in reality shows really ruin the experience? If you're listening on Cinematic Doctrine's website, let us know in the comments below or shoot us an email to cinematicdoctrine@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving a review for the podcast on your respective podcast app at the end of this episode. Unlike YouTube or Reddit, there isn't really a way to let us know how we're doing with a thumbs up or thumbs down, so the best way to leave your thoughts on the podcast is to write a review on iTunes, Podchaser, or wherever you listen. And as mentioned before, Cinematic Doctrine has a Patreon. For as little as $3 a month, you're opted into a once-a-month movie poll where you decide a movie discussed on the podcast. You also gain access to The Pre-Show, a Patreon-exclusive podcast series where we casually talk movies, Christianity, and life itself. There are other unique benefits that come with supporting the podcast, so be sure to check that out at patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine. A special shout out to those who support at the Arthouse Theater tier on Patreon. Thank you so much, Mom, Dad, and Melanie. You guys are the best, and your continued monetary support is greatly appreciated. All this will be available in the show notes. Until next time, stay cool. Want some Cinematic Doctrine swag? You're in luck. We've got 3-inch Cinematic Doctrine logo stickers exclusive for Patreon supporters. Perfect for your travel mug or laptop. Head over to patreon.com/cinematicdoctrine, link in the show notes, and choose the independent theater tier. Doing so will net you other perks too. But let's be real, the podcast stickers are the coolest perk. So get yourself some podcast stickers by supporting on Patreon.